So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeler.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von So tickt Berlin, dem Podcast, in dem wir hier hinter die Kulissen blicken, Geschichten erzählen und die Menschen feiern, die mit Leidenschaft zum Beispiel auf der Bühne stehen. Heute habe ich einen, ja, ganz besonderen Gast für euch, David Mann, Sänger, Entertainer und leidenschaftlicher Botschafter der Musik. Geboren in der Nähe von Detroit, aufgewachsen im spirituellen Umfeld der Baptistenkirche, fand er schon früh seine große Liebe zur Musik und zur Kraft des Gesangs. Besonders die Gospelmusik wurde zur festen Konstante in seinem Leben. Seit vielen Jahren steht er als Background-Sänger in Elvis-Tribute-Shows auf internationalen Bühnen und ist aktuell Teil des weltberühmten Stems Quartet, jener legendären Gospelgruppe, die eng mit Elvis Presley verbunden war. Doch nun geht Elvis bzw. David einen neuen Schritt. In der Live-Produktion Rock Around the Clock hier im Estrel Showtheater schlüpft er erstmals komplett in die Rolle des charismatischen Men in Black-Sängers Johnny Cash. Was es bedeutet, diesen ikonischen Musiker zu verkörpern, welche persönlichen Erlebnisse ihn geprägt haben und warum seine Wurzeln in der Gospelmusik bis heute entscheidend sind, darüber sprechen wir jetzt. Ich freue mich sehr. Hey, David, welcome to So Tickt Berlin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. How are you?
No, yeah, so far so good. You know, I'm a bit tired, but I'm really, really looking forward to our little chat here. And it's a big pleasure because we still know each other for almost, I think, 2 years, right?
Yes. Yes. So we know that both of us are pretty much just always tired. There's never, isn't someone, are you tired? I said all the time.
All the time. I mean, you all get this jet lag, maybe. This is the big problem.
I think it's not getting enough sleep and getting the sleep we get when the sun's up already. That seems to me, I think that's the main reason for me.
Yeah, I mean, you started with that big tour. I met you in Elvis Das Musical. Mm-hmm. You're one of the Stems Quartet members.
Yes, sir.
With Ed Enoch.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with Ed Enoch? I mean, when was the first time you met Ed and he said, hey, Dave, come and join me?
Well, those two things are two different times.
Yeah.
But I've known who Ed is since I was a kid.
Wow.
I was a little boy.
Wow.
Because Ed's been singing and gospel music for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And I was born in 82. He was born in 42. And
could you believe? Yeah.
Yeah. He was singing with the Stamps when my father first saw them. And flash forward until when I was maybe a teenager was the first time I actually met Ed. I was probably 19. I was auditioning for another gospel group, and that gospel group, maybe a week later, was playing a date, and they were playing a date with the Stamps Quartet. And so my dad said, let's go see the group you're playing with, because they're also playing with the Stamps.
Uh-huh.
So we sat right in the front row and saw the group that I was auditioning with work, and I knew them, and so they were talking to me, and then the Stamps came out, and we watched them perform, and Ed was right there, front and center. But it wasn't until January 2022 when I got the call when they asked me to come here, and that was only because I had already been singing backups for Elvis tribute artists for about 10 years.
Wow.
With another group.
Wow. Wow.
So that's why that happened, but that was in 2022.
Okay, so okay,
not very long ago.
No. I mean, now we have 25. Yeah, Dave. Let's start at the beginning. How did you growing up in the Baptist Church,
mm-hmm,
near Detroit shape your love for music and your path as a singer? Is that true?
Absolutely. It's gospel music. My father. So first of all, let me say there is a difference between the gospel music that I grew up listening to in church.
Yeah.
They basically just called it Christian music. They didn't necessarily call it gospel music. It was just Christian music, and it was very conservative. All we had was a piano and an organ. We weren't allowed to have drums. No, there wasn't drums in the church. There wasn't guitars, certainly not electric guitars, but not even acoustic guitars. There was maybe some woodwinds and some trumpets for special occasions, like special bands and stuff, but they didn't do anything like what my father discovered a week before I was born. He went to his first gospel quartet concert.
Uh-huh.
And he came home with the records and he fell in love with the music and was playing. So the gospel music that Ed sings and that the Stamps sing and that I've done for over 15 years now is gospel quartet music.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up listening to that from the moment I came out of the womb. It was playing in the house. And
so you were influenced by your father?
My father is the one who introduced me to gospel quartet music.
Uh-huh.
And we used to have, back then, I think cassette tapes were starting to come in. 8-tracks had gone out. So they had, my dad had a record player, which also had a tape deck in it.
Yeah.
And then our cars started to get tape decks in them. So whether we were at home or whether we were in the car ride, going to church, or going to grandma's house or wherever, gospel quartet music was always playing. Wow. So even though I grew up in church singing very conservative Christian music, I always had gospel music in the back of my head. And I always knew that music's way more fun and way more exciting to me. And that's what I want to do, is sing like that.
Wow. Okay.
So it definitely shaped. That's it. I ignored it for a long time because a lot of people in very conservative religious denominations, you know, they try to, not necessarily because they think it's wrong, but they try to steer young people away from that just because not everybody is geared to avoiding certain pitfalls.
Yeah.
But some more than others. And so they try to, you know, like shepherding a flock, keep all the sheep close. And they didn't really want me to go that way. So I fought it for a long time.
Oh.
But I eventually did. I'm living my dream
right now
for a long time. And it's super fulfilling.
Wow. I mean, this is really, I like this when you say I'm living my dream, because everybody used to be living their own dreams, but it's sometimes really hard, isn't it?
I mean, well, it is hard because even though I'm living my dream, you know, I'm working for people. There's all the different things, you know. Am I my own boss?
No,
more so than a lot of people are, but I'm not my own boss. But that doesn't mean I don't necessarily want to be my own boss. There's a lot of responsibilities that come with that, that I, you know, learn your limitations and celebrate your strengths.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I would rather do that. I'm happy working for people.
Cool. You know? Cool. Yeah. I mean, this is great. And David, you've let choirs recorded your own gospel albums and traveled internationally. What is it about gospel music that continues to inspire you after all these years?
I believe it.
Uh-huh.
It's something that I've believed in my whole life. And when I was a kid, I started to sing in, when I was a teenager, I should clarify, I started to sing in the adult church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my Baptist church also had a Christian school that they had built. So I went to school and I went to church at the same place. Uh-huh. So everything was very tight-knit.
Tight, yeah.
And so the young kids would have their singing that they would do in for the young people. There's like a teen church and a teen choir and young people's choirs for different ages. And so I got to sing in those, but most of the time the young people were not allowed to do solos in the adult church or sing in the adult choir until they reached a certain age. But they started to use me a little earlier than that, when I was about 16. And my father, who was at the time not in church, he was working, worked on an assembly line for General Motors making automotive parts, mm-hmm, vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew a lot of the people at the church who also worked there because it was a big factory town.
Yeah.
And some of those guys were going back and seeing my dad at work and saying, "You got to see your son. He's they're using him in church. He's doing great." And
wow.
So he came,
uh-huh,
back and started to watch it and kind of got inspired.
Wow.
And because my parents had been divorced years before that.
Yeah.
And he had been remarried and kind of had fallen out of his faith for a little bit. And he told me years later that when he saw me singing in church, it kind of inspired him to come back to his faith and brought his family back to his faith. And it changed their entire life, really. And to me, it made me think about the gospel quartets that he introduced me to.
Yeah.
That put that love and that desire in for it. And in a way, you could say he kind of saved himself by sharing that. But also that those quartets that didn't even know us, didn't know what was happening in our lives, their music made a difference in my life, which I should say first my father's life, which then made a difference in my life, which then made a difference again in my father's life. And I remember thinking, if I could do that, and just one person can have their life changed from the music that they heard, how much they enjoy it.
Definitely.
And that makes a difference to me.
Yeah.
But when you're traveling around the entire world for months and years and over a decade, even though you don't know how many people that happens to, even though you don't have people coming up and saying, oh, this, it has to have happened.
Yeah.
That's the hope anyways, is that I can make a difference in at least one person's life. And then if I can make a difference in at least one more person's life, then it's worth it.
Wow.
Well, it's exciting to me. To me, it's something that easily keeps me going.
Wow. I like that really much. You've sung with, and maybe tell me if it's not true, with incredible artists like Willie Nelson, Chris Christopherson, and Larry Gatlin.
Yes.
Wow. Many of them were close friends to Johnny Cash. What have you learned from sharing the stage with such big names, big legends?
Oh, we're all the same people.
Mm-hmm.
We're all the same different people.
Mm.
It sounds kind of silly, but
no, you're right.
When I was, obviously those guys don't know who I am. If you mentioned my name today, they would know me. We were there for Farm Aid events, which Willie Nelson is part of a team that has been doing a Farm Aid event in the U.S. for years and years and years, decades and decades, raising money for the farmers of America.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all kinds of different acts from all across the country, and I'm sure outside of the country at some times. Johnny Cash has played on it before. But they had the group that I was in at the time, which was one of the descendants of the Blackwood brothers from the 30s, which had the connections with Elvis, which is why I was already doing Elvis backup at the time. That's how we got on there, through a connection with our booking agent and everything. So, and I was up there, standing, 3 feet away from Willie, playing his guitar, singing, I'll Fly Away, Oh Glory, I'll Fly Away. And, Chris Christopherson was over there playing. And then you had at different times, not on that show, but Larry Gatlin, who also was sung with, Johnny and Willie and the Highwaymen, different versions of the Highwaymen before. All friends of Johnny, but it's just it's like singing with really anybody to me. I mean, it's nice to be able to say, but I didn't really hang out with them.
Yeah.
But it does show me that, they came up, they shake your hand, look you in the eye, treat you with respect.
Oh, cool.
Thanks for having me. You did a great job.
And, cool.
And you go separate ways, and then maybe someone's over there and Willie's rolling a joint, or some guy's over there having a drink, or
of course
whatever they want to do, and they're just behaving like we would after the show or something.
Yeah,
want to hang out, want to have a drink, have fun, and whatever. That's
David. For over years, I'm pretty sure for over 10 years, you've performed as part of Elvis Presley tribute shows. What makes the music of this area, I mean the 50s and the 60s, rock and roll, so timeless for audiences today?
I mean, obviously I am not from that generation, so I can't speak from experience, but to me it just seems so much more real. And that doesn't mean music today can't be real, but it was real then, because they didn't really have anything else. And aside from that, all that music, those styles that they all did back then, it all kind of came all kind of originated from the same place, which was, you know, like the black spirituals and the black gospel. And you know that it was real for them because it came out of pain. It came out of anguish. It came out of oppression. It came out of, that's one of the only things they could find to feel joy was either the music that they sang or what the music was about, which was their redemption, their salvation, their faith in God, or embracing their pain and their singing the blues.
Yeah.
Or, you know? So, but rock and roll and like Elvis and Johnny Cash, those guys, their songs, they became so big and famous. And those two men specifically, not that there weren't others, certainly were, but they used their music as platforms. I mean, and Elvis wasn't a political person.
Yeah.
When they tried to interview him and ask him about politics, he would never like to engage in that. He would literally say things like, I don't really like to talk about politics. And then they would say, well, are you saying singers shouldn't talk about politics? And no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't. But you also have songs that he's sung like In the Ghetto and If I Can Dream, that talk about very political things.
Yeah.
So he still used his music for that. And Johnny Cash was no different at all.
Yeah.
A lot of his songs did the same thing, especially later in his career, during the Vietnam War and all kinds of stuff like that. He always had a love to speak for people that didn't have a voice and maybe shine a little light on their plight or their needs or their, you know, what they're crying for. Because it doesn't, you know, the people without voices are not necessarily silent. There's just people that aren't listening to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they just need a little amplification. And sometimes who can do that better than one of the most famous singers at the time
getting on
stage and doing that? So rock and roll to me was, back then, it was about not a revolution, but it was about that, making a statement. Because even rock and roll in itself, especially with Elvis, that music was not really acceptable because it was kind of brand new.
Yeah, yeah.
At least to the audiences that were listening to it, it was brand new.
Yeah.
And so it was in itself, that genre was kind of like a statement to talk out and say, we want to do it this way.
Yes.
And we're going to say it this way. And you might not like it, but all your kids are going to love it, you know?
Definitely. Hey, now you're jumping or you're stepping into the role of Johnny Cash in Rock Around the Clock. We still play it today and until this week. What drew you to Johnny Cash as a figure, and what part of his spirit are you most excited to bring to life on stage?
Which part of his spirit
are you most excited to bring?
Spirit.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't listen to Johnny Cash my whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, I did, but not on purpose, because he's kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he has been everywhere, man. But his music's in movies and TV shows, video games. I mean, it's everywhere. So of course I knew who he was and I heard about him. But it's the gospel music that ties everything together for me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those two questions kind of bookend together with gospel.
Yeah.
Because he grew up Baptist and, or at least had converted to it at one point early in his life. But he, gospel was from when he was a kid, all the way through his early music, all the way through his middle of his career to the end of his career. He was always incorporating gospel into his shows.
Yeah.
Just like Elvis. But more so with Johnny, he was very adamant about sharing that. And to me, that's the biggest part of his spirit that I would like to try to emulate, because I can relate with that the most. I feel that the most. There's things that I think I understand, not that no one else does, but I feel like I can understand that part, especially being someone who grew up in it, who was married and had children and learned and knew what it was like to try to balance and juggle that while you're on the road touring, and the struggles of being away and the pressure that puts on your relationships and the idea of going through and having broken relationships and trying to figure that out and going through vocal struggles and health issues and then knowing what it was like to really cherish that upbringing, that religious community, and not having that anymore, but still valuing it and still believing, but kind of being an outsider.
Yeah.
And then finding a way as you grow and you mature and you move past the idea or the feeling that I can't have that anymore. And you realize, no, I can still connect that. And learning how to do that, learning how to mend all those things that you thought might have been broken.
Uh-huh.
And to try to walk a line that keeps you involved with everybody.
So yeah.
You still reach the widest audience that you can.
Yeah.
You can get to.
Get you. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Like it. Three more questions.
Mm-hmm.
If you could sing a duet with Johnny Cash himself, which song would you choose and why?
Probably Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Mm-hmm.
And the why is the answer to the last question.
Ah, okay.
Because Sunday Morning Coming Down was written by Kris Kristofferson for Johnny to sing.
Ah.
And it talks about a man who's older, not an old man, but a man who's maybe middle-aged, and he grew up in church.
Yeah.
And he grew up knowing what it was like in the U.S. Now, for Johnny and Kris Kristofferson, it would have been a different time than when I grew up,
yeah,
obviously. But they're talking about on a Sunday, going to church in the morning, waking up, hearing the church bells, going to church, hearing them singing, the choirs, Sunday afternoon going and someone's frying chicken and they're going to have a big potluck and they're going to sit with the family and then maybe go to the park. And this community, this religious community, is having a wonderful time on,
yeah,
Sunday. But you've got this guy who's in his 40s who wakes up. He smoked all night the night before. He's trying to write songs, picking on his guitar. He gets up and washes his face and looks for his cleanest dirty shirt because, yeah, he doesn't have any clean shirts. So he just finds the one that's the least dirty. He puts it on and he goes outside to have a smoke and he starts noticing little kid playing with a kicking a can down the street, a father pushing his daughter on the swings. He can smell fried chicken.
Mm.
He starts to hear the church bells. And then he's walking down the street smoking. And there's no one on the street because they're all either in church, playing, eating. And then he starts saying, I wish I was stoned. And the reason he says that is because he wants to forget how bad he feels. Because he knows what he's missing, because he loves that, but he doesn't have it right now.
Mm.
But at the same time, he could put out the cigarette, go, you know, and go into church, but he doesn't. He still keeps walking the same path, but he values everything that he's seeing. But he sometimes might want to just, you know, bring his mood down a little bit so he doesn't feel the pain of not living that life anymore. And I understand that because I've experienced that. And because I grew up, I went to church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night.
Wow.
Every week. And then I was in a Christian school Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
With so religion and church and
Jeez.
Worship and yeah. faith, that was a part of every day. And Sundays, we go to Sunday school and then Sunday morning church. And then afterwards, if it was a special day, we might go to a restaurant, have a nice, maybe some church families will come with us. We'll have a big dinner. Sometimes the church might have a special day where they're like, everyone's bringing in a dish. We're all going to eat in the big garden,
yeah,
you know, that
yeah.
we have out here. They call it dinner on the grounds.
Uh-huh.
That's a big community thing. And it's one of the benefits of, I mean, there's plenty of negative things that religion has brought to the world, but there's a lot of positive too.
Definitely, yeah.
And community is one of those things.
Yeah.
And it's something that right now in this modern day is really lacking, where there's people are just at each other left and right. I
mean,
everything's online. No one's sitting like this across from each other having a conversation. There's not, we're lacking community. Because unless you sit down with people, you're not forced to have to work things out with them, you know? But when you grow up that way, it's just, you don't even think that's not like that. It's just normal to you until you step outside of it and you're walking down the street smoking a cigarette. And you're like, I wish I could have that again. But that song's is very powerful to me. And I'd like to sing some harmonies with him on that.
It's interesting. I mean, I know you almost since 2 years, and it's so great to see what's behind your surface. Could I say that? What's deep inside you? I mean, you're such a young, good singer, good entertainer, and I mean, with that big heart. But if you don't look behind that David Mann wall, you can't see this really beautiful, young entertainer, singer, good singer. I mean, really, this is so interesting. I mean, you're smart, you're kind, there's so much stuff inside you, and it's so interesting to listen to you. I mean, you have something to say.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You sure 20 is all I have to give you for that, or is it?
No, it was a 50.
Oh, shoot.
What's one thing people would never guess about you?
One thing people would never guess. Was that how you asked it last time?
No, actually,
secret something.
Yeah, it could be a secret as well. I mean, I'm open.
That's the crazy thing, is because out of all my friends, there's always somebody that knows pretty much everything. I'm just depends on how much people dig. I usually give up my information quite easily. I can't think of, I mean, people might not guess about me.
Is there a secret as well?
No, I mean, there's not necessarily any secrets. I mean, there's little things that aren't going to really matter. Like I'm irrationally scared of flying insects, I guess. I love what's something random, you know, like, anytime a buzz goes by, and I know they're not gonna hurt me, really. Hopefully, maybe a little sting or something. I am a much bigger threat, but I don't know.
Then maybe it's,
I don't like water, being in water that I can't see the bottom.
Yeah, me too. Okay,
and I love the ocean.
Yeah,
I love swimming in the lake, but in a lake in Michigan, for example, where I'm from, at least I know there's no sharks. In a lake, or, you know, the at least the fish, they're not going to be able to take my leg off or something. I don't know. I mean, most people just need to ask. I don't really have an answer to that.
Totally fine. Because this is a Verlan podcast, I have to ask you, what is your opinion about Berlin? What's your first impression of Berlin? And when you came, what was your first thought about Berlin? And when you came, what was the first time we were?
My first time was in February of 2022. I love Berlin.
Ah, cool.
My first impression was I didn't realize that graffiti was legal. I'm not used to seeing so much graffiti. And because in the States, when you see graffiti, you usually think about crime, or you think about something being dirty, or because it's something they clean up immediately. So you just associate that with,
Now,
I mean, of course it's art.
Yeah. It depends.
Some people don't think it's art, you know, and sometimes it's, you know, what's the difference between defacing something and, you know, putting a nice picture on it?
Yeah.
You could put a nice picture on something, but if it's someone's private property, to them, you're defacing, so whatever. But here, just, you know, you get used to it very quick because it's just everywhere. And but that's not a big deal to me. It was just one of the first things I noticed, I remember. But I love being in Berlin. I'm not very good at going out. I like to go out, but I normally won't go out by myself. So if people ask me to go somewhere,
I mean, you went to the Quasimodo, right?
I've been to the Quasimodo 3 times.
Oh,
now.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And, I love that. That's a nice little place. I've been to some of the places around there, some of the all night, either restaurant slash bar places, had some really good carrot cake at a place. I can't remember what it is. Something cafe real close by there. Stays open real late.
Michael?
And something cafe near the Quasimodo.
I need the Quasimodo in Charlottenburg.
I thought it had cafe in the name.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. But I like that. I've also been to another music venue to listen to our mutual friend Robin Scott.
Yeah.
His band played. And it was out by the pier somewhere. A little music club. Small, much smaller than the Quasimodo.
Oh, smaller?
Yeah.
I mean, the Quasimodo isn't small, but okay, great. Wow.
But it was very nice. And I've been to some little swing dance places in the area. I've been to various restaurants, Portuguese restaurants, which I really love. The Stamps. None of the Stamps like seafood except me. So if I do that, I have to go by myself or go with someone else that likes that. Just recently, last night, I went to Trepp Tower Park.
Yeah.
Which I have seen on maps, and I didn't realize it was right here.
Yeah, it's not far.
Very lovely little, like, food. They pull up the windows and have food, pastries and drinks, and nice to see the boats there. And there's a little seafood restaurant that's on a boat called the Clipper.
Yeah.
Ate there. It was very nice. So I like, one of the things I love the most, I think, about Berlin and just Europe in general, because it's a stark contrast to the U.S., is the transportation, infrastructure.
Mm.
The fact that I can, just walk outside the hotel here, go over the bridge, get on the S-Bahn, and get anywhere in Berlin that I want to get for a few euros, or however much that is. I like that because I actually don't own a car in the States. I live with people that have multiple cars, and I don't really suffer for that reason, but I would love to be able to just go home and get on a train and just ride into Nashville. I'd see a lot more Nashville, which I live 15 minutes a car ride from there.
Wow.
The Johnny Cash Museum is in Nashville. I'd be going there all the time if I could just get on a bus and be there, But other than that, I mean, I stay in this hotel an awful lot because I do like my time alone.
Yeah.
As much as it seems like I love to hang out and party, which I do.
Yeah, I know. I know you.
But I'm usually there. I'm usually the last one. But I'm still, when I get back to my room, there's that feeling of happiness, like, okay, not that I wasn't having fun, not that I was sitting there like I can't wait until I can go back to my room. That's not how I am, but when I get there, I am happy, and I still won't go to bed right away. I'll still be up for another 3 hours at least, either looking at stuff from back home, because I'm 6 hours right now ahead from them, so a lot of them are still awake. Even at 3, 4, 5 in the morning here, they're still awake. So there's a brother, friend, colleague back home that wants to play a video game or something, or a TV show that comes out at 9 p.m.
Oh, yes, geez.
In the States. Well, it comes out at 3 a.m. here, so I'll stay up and watch that, so I can see that before I go to bed. But yeah, Berlin, it's truly a second home.
Oh,
I mean, I spend like 6 months out of the year here.
So. Unbelievable. So you said it before. What's coming next? Elvis coming to Berlin. You will play the Elvis show here after you finished Rock Around the Clock.
Yeah, but we finished Rock Around the Clock this coming Sunday. And then I fly home to the States the following Wednesday. And then we'll come back in August.
Yeah.
So just 2 months at home and then come back here for the Elvis show at the Estrel showroom.
Cool.
Which, I mean, this is a little bit of a, this is some privileged information, but there's going to be some fun changes coming
to the
Elvis show.
Perfect.
I can't say what they are.
No, good.
I can't promise when they will happen but
they will happen. And next,
people that are interested in that can look forward to that.
Cool. And next year there's a big tour again.
Next year, I think they've got 49 shows on the date. So basically 50 might It might surpass 50 by then, wow, by the time the tour comes around.
So, David, pick up your guitar. Now it's 6:10 almost.
Yeah, sound check is in 20 minutes.
20 minutes. And I appreciate that so much. Thank you for sharing this interview, this podcast with me. And
thank
I'm
you.
Really looking forward to see you on stage in a couple of minutes. yeah, and hopefully maybe there would be a next chance to get you in front of the microphone to talk about other stuff. I mean, there's a lot of more stories, I'm pretty sure, inside you. They have to spread the world.
Yeah, there's a lot. I have a tendency to ramble, so just be careful what you wish for.
No, thank you. Last words?
Thank you for your listeners to listening. I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to be able to talk, but if nobody listens,
that's true. Yeah, that's true. Und an euch da draußen, denkt dran, bleibt zuversichtlich und fröhlich. Danke.
So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeland.